This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk.
Hi, my name's Chris Scott and I'm here with Tom Birchfield from LiveX. How are you, Tom?
Very well, thank you. Good to be here.
Excellent. Well, here, you're in LiveX. We're in the LiveX offices in South London.
Yeah, doesn't get much better.
You're the head of market intelligence here at LiveX. And what we're going to talk a wee bit about today is a bit about LiveX, understand a little bit about LiveX, and try and get some idea about what's been happening in the fine wine market, because it's been changing massively over the last 5 years or so. And it's in a massive change. So before we get into that, just we did a podcast on LiveX probably a few years after you guys launched, probably about 10 years ago.
Yeah.
But do you want to tell us a little bit about LiveX, just so, for the listeners who haven't listened to that particular one?
Sure. So LiveX was set up, it's actually 25 years ago. We're celebrating our 25-year anniversary this summer. It was set up by James Miles and Justin Gibbs. It is the secondary fine wine market. It is a place where wine businesses from across the globe come to trade wine. It was set up to make an industry which had sort of survived on opacity, and it was set up with the intention of making it more transparent, safe, and efficient for wine businesses to trade with each other. So yeah, we're into our 25th year. It's an incredibly interesting time to actually be a part of the company. You know, LiveX has essentially, we have our bread and butter of the trade. We have 600 members who operate around the world and trade anonymously on the platform. And over those 25 years, we've built up a lot of very, very valuable data. And where the company is moving to now is that data can inform our members' decision-making, not just for their trade on the platform, make it more, you know, efficient, make them make better trading decisions, but how can we sort of take all of that data and support them across their entire workflow off the platform as well. That's kind of where I sit. That's sort of where I sit in the company, is taking the data and hopefully helping our, if I do a good job, our members will be making better decisions off the back of the data that we have.
Yeah, there's a big difference between data and information, isn't it? And that's what you're trying to do.
Yeah, data, insight, content, all that, you know, taking the data, putting it into something which can actually help you. That's where I work.
Okay. And do you have particular tools to do that for the, because you see stock traders and they have like momentum graphs and candlestick.
All that. Yeah. I mean, I think where I would sort of underline is we have a load of tools and a load of ways of sort of visualizing, talking about the data. At the heart of it, we are pretty confident that our transactional data is sort of the gold standard. It's the most reliable way of evaluating fine wine prices in the market. So everything is built off the back of that. We have a bunch of charts. You know, we're working on sort of forecasting, all the rest of it. We might touch on a little bit of, you know, how technology can be brought into that and will be brought into that in future. I'm currently working pretty hard on personalization. So we have a lot of data. We have 600 different members. How can we take that data and in whatever format that would be, in a chart, in a report, in a dashboard, all the rest of it, how can we make it more relevant to whoever's looking at it, essentially.
Is the data you've amassed, is it only LiveX trades or is it other trades as well?
This is super interesting. Are you sure you weren't sort of asked this question by one of our members? We have obviously our own proprietary data.
Yeah.
We also collect auction data from major auction houses around the world. Mm-hmm. We collect a lot of list data, so fine wine lists, and we produce a market price off the back of that. And actually what we're doing at the moment is we're collaborating with our members to bring their own, what we call OFX. So all of the trade they do off LiveX, how we can bring that in so that we're giving them an overview of not just the trade that they do on LiveX, but across like the whole of their company. And by doing that, we're going to give such an incredible overview of the whole entirety of the fine wine market.
A lot of the things about the fine wine market is that it's quite a liquid market for about 10 years after release. Mm-hmm. And I think you guys, your markets, your LiveX 500, et cetera, they only use the first 10 years, isn't it, after release?
The new vintage will be added into the index when it comes physical. So yep. If we're talking about Bordeaux at the moment, the most recent vintage in there is a 2022. Mm-hmm. we have different indices. So we have, for example, when we're talking about Bordeaux, we have indices which track the 10 most recent vintages when they're, you know, super liquid. There's lots of it knocking about. In some cases, too much of it knocking about. And then we have various different indices which look at the performance of back vintages. So we have one called Legends 40, which tracks great vintages from Blue Chip Bordeaux. It's really interesting seeing the performance of those back vintages compared to the recent vintages, particularly at the moment. It gives a really like solid oversight and understanding of, you know, how prices are progressing, because they do act very, very differently.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I can see that, because as you're saying, the current market, the first 10 years, because I always think of investable wines, really, if you're going to be a trader, you're trading the 10 years because there's a liquid market there.
You know, yeah.
And not just liquid as in wine liquid, but mm-hmm. there's buyers and sellers in the market and it's easy to move stock.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we keep reporting on, I think we'll get into it, and about a stock overhang. Essentially, you know, there's lots of Bordeaux. Bordeaux is probably, we'll talk about it a lot, but it's, you know, it's the most well understood market. There's a lot of it that gets released onto the market every single year. And there's been a fundamental difference in how recent vintages have been performing compared to those back vintages, where, you know, due to consumption-induced scarcity, etc., those prices have been much more resilient than in recent times, where we've seen vintage after vintage getting released and prices falling off. But in general, yeah, historically, it would be the most recent vintages when they come out, and there's lots of them around, those will be most actively traded.
When someone's trading on LiveX, one of the big issues always when you're buying fine wines on a secondary market is provenance.
Mm-hmm.
How do you guys ensure that the wines being traded are actually what they are? You know, there was a, I think it was at one point, there was more Mouton Rothschild in China than was actually produced.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really good question. We invest quite a lot of resource internally into this. So it probably starts, well, it doesn't probably start, it definitely starts before a member is allowed to actually start trading on the platform, go through a huge amount of vetting to make sure, you know, they have their financials in place. We ask for trade recommendations, et cetera, so that we can be pretty confident that, you know, they are a legit business. We partner with authentication experts. If anyone's seen Sour Grapes, documentary about Rudy Kiernwen,
yep.
Michael Egan works with us. We have pretty state-of-the-art processes in our warehouses. It's pretty cool. And when I went down there last year, it's fascinating all the technology that goes into it. We were looking at a bottle of Ravenau, can't remember what crew. And I was like, wow, that's cool. Bottle of Ravenau. They're like, no, it's not. but to the naked eye, yeah, it looks legit. But there's a lot of work that goes into it, training up our team internally so they can spot things pretty quickly. Then we have all the technology which helps us pick it out. And I think one thing is that, you know, we have built up over time a really strong collaboration across with our merchants right the way back to the producers, so that we have like a really solid network where we can sort of make sure that we're not sort of fake wines aren't getting through LiveX.
You're looking at your wines. I thought I could store my wines in any bonded warehouse or anywhere really and trade on LiveX. I don't need to store them in with LiveX.
No. So when a trade goes through, what happens is merchant A sells it anonymously to merchant B.
Mm-hmm.
They could actually be sitting next to each other in London for all, you know, for all they know. We take delivery of it, goes through our warehouse, and that's where the authentication comes into place.
Oh, okay.
And then it gets, you know, sent on.
Oh, okay. So when you're doing, you're actually physically, it's not just sort of someone moving it from one bonded warehouse to the other. It's going through LiveX, getting authenticated, and then going through.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. And what happens if the trade is the one found out to be dud?
If it's found out to be a fake,
yeah,
then the trade doesn't go through.
Trade doesn't go through. Okay. Okay. Let's talk a wee bit about the level of sophistication in the wine trade.
Mm-hmm.
I used to be involved in energy trading. Energy mm-hmm. trading, when I was involved, was not sophisticated.
Mm-hmm.
It was all over-the-counter OTC contracts, and then they set up a market for it.
Yeah.
But it was very much a very simple market, very little futures, that type of thing. When LiveX was first set up, fine wines always had a sort of a futures market in on Primera, if you like. I suppose
yeah.
that's the best way of describing it. Do you want to just tell us a little bit about the on Primera futures market, and then as a level of sophistication, then we'll talk about other products perhaps?
Sure. So on Primera market as it stands today, or just an example of sophistication?
Just as an example of sophistication.
Okay. So yeah, I mean, the Bordeaux en Primeur market is, yeah, I guess it's been around for a very long time. The original contract from it would be that as a producer, we will release the vintage whilst it's still in barrel. And as a consumer, you will get the opportunity to buy it at the lowest price that it will ever be in its lifetime. That's essentially the contract. It gives the producer, you know, working capital to do all the rest of their business off the back of. Mm-hmm. I guess it's worth touching on now that where we are today, that whole system is under quite a lot of pressure. To put it bluntly, since 2016, as a consumer, I don't know if you've been buying on Primeur since then, but as a consumer, you'd be out of pocket for, what is that, 7 vintages in a row.
Yeah.
So should we return to that a little bit later on?
Yeah, we'll come back to that.
Yeah.
More about like, on Primeur is like a futures contract. As mm-hmm. you said, you buy the wines before it's even bottled.
Yeah.
And then they're delivered in the future, normally a couple of years down the track, really. You get physical delivery at a later date.
Yeah.
But people can still take those purchases and trade them on a market, I presume.
Yeah. You can take them and trade them before they're physical. We actually have the first listings of the 24s being listed on LiveX just this week, and you know the campaign started a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah. So if you think about it, you've got at one level, if you think about market sophistications, at one level, you've got a bottle of wine. I pay you some money. You give me the wine.
Mm-hmm.
That's very basic level. At another level of sophistication is, I'm going to have a bottle of wine in the future. You're going to pay me now, and mm-hmm. I'm going to deliver that bottle of wine to you. And then what you're saying now is you've got a situation where I've got a contract that I've purchased wine that will be delivered in a couple of years' time, and I'm going to trade that going forward. So you're now trading futures as opposed to trading physical.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. We tend to see not a great deal of actual, once the wine has been initially bought by a merchant, we don't tend to see a great deal of trade before it becomes physical.
Okay, and why is that? Is that more because the seller needs to sell it because maybe they're distressed or maybe they've died and they're
yeah. I mean, it's an interesting one. My take on it would be at the moment, it's probably because you know that you're sitting on an asset which might be depreciating. So what tends to happen with Bordeaux is that the critics all go down in sort of April time. They rate it. The wines come out. And then it almost goes through a second phase when the critics retaste it in barrel. And in the original tasting, they tend to give a range. And then when they retaste, once the wine's in bottle, you know, they can change quite a lot. So there is actually, from a consumer's point of view, there is a fair amount of risk in mm-hmm. that. You're buying an unfinished wine whose quality, whilst it has been assessed by the people who are most well-placed to assess it, you know, they can change. The recent vintage, what was it, 2022s, we saw a massive amount of wines which had been sort of upgraded once they'd been tasted when they were in bottle.
Okay. And you also hear of stories where the chateau will choose the best barrel that they'll give it. And then when they finally put their Grand Cru together or their Grand Vin together,
yeah,
it's a blend of all the barrels and therefore maybe the quality isn't quite there.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to cast assertions, but yeah. You may have heard of stories. Yeah, you do hear a couple of stories about that. But yeah, I guess, yeah, just online, it's sort of on LiveX, we don't tend to see a sort of huge amount of trade of these wines before they do become physical.
You guys have got your indexes. They've been created. They've been out in the market now for 25 years, effectively. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of historical data for the indexes. Do you see people trading against the index? So we think the index is going to go up 3 points and you think it's going to go down 2 points. Let's do a swap on that.
No.
No, you don't see any of that type of thing.
No, I don't see that. Would you expect to see that?
Not necessarily, but the thing about the fine wine market, a lot of people involved in the fine wine market are people involved in finance as well, and they have that level of sophistication in other markets. Mm-hmm. So the question is, would they want to bring it into this type of market? If you're a money trader and you're using all sorts of complex product, mm-hmm. you know those products really well, you're now also a fine wine investor, why would you not think about bringing those products in, especially if you know how to use them to make money?
Yeah.
Or at least also manage risks, you know, because historically the fine wine market used to be a forward curve where it curved up.
Yeah, yeah. The long-term trend line is still intact. It's about.
Yeah, but you do have to go back to 1850 for it.
Well, yeah. At least the 25-year long-term trend line since LiveX started is still intact, with a few notable bumps along the way.
But volatility, that's the whole thing about markets, isn't it? Volatility is, without volatility, all those secondary, third products aren't required. And you need that volatility to make people want to purchase things that protect you against volatility.
Yeah.
And maybe that's the problem, is that you just haven't had the volatility in the market in the past.
I think a lot of the merchants who trade on the platform would probably be saying they are feeling a lot of volatility at the moment.
Is it volatility though, or is it just a change in sentiment and it's a downward change? Because volatility is some weeks it's high, everything's going up, and some weeks everything's going down. And I think it's just gone from a trend of going up to a trend of going down, and it's not, it doesn't have volatility. It has trends that are changing.
Yeah, I mean that's true to say. I think probably talking about volatility is a sort of slightly longer term, not necessarily the correct definition, but in terms of volatility of the market, I think over the past 6 months we've seen quite a lot of fairly rapid change. You know, 2024 US buyers were made up the biggest share of purchase value on the exchange for the first time ever. Regions that they bought, for example, Tuscany, Piedmont, looked like their prices were doing pretty well, specifically because of that. You have some sort of quite potentially volatile decision-making happening over the pond, and it looks like the market does become a little bit more volatile in that sense.
Okay. And the next level of sophistication, I suppose, is maybe contracts for differences or things like that. So when you've got a product and it's going to go up in value, or it might go down in value, who knows, mm-hmm. you start trading less on the product itself, but the derivative of that. You know, it's like derivative trading, if you mm-hmm. like, where if the price goes up, do you have market makers who say, look, if Bordeaux, Chateau Mouton Rothschild goes up 10%, I will pay you the difference for that? Or do you see that level of sophistication? There's no derivative trading?
No, we don't see that. Don't see that yet. No.
You don't think you will see it, or?
I think potentially in future. At the moment, I would say because the market is pretty volatile and it's quite difficult to assess where prices might be in a few years, I think it's quite a risky thing for someone to be instigating.
Yeah.
But perhaps when the market changes, when things sort of calm down, you could start to see that. But I don't think we're there just yet.
Yeah. Is there any other products that people trade apart from futures and maybe the odd sale of future contracts?
In terms of when you say products?
I mean, there's so many financial products out there. If you wanted to get involved in the finance market, there's all sorts of caps and collars and mm-hmm. all sorts of crazy products that people can purchase. Yeah. You're not seeing that level of sophistication in the wine market.
No, we're not seeing it yet. I mean, we've had a few members join when we're talking about sort of tokenization, things like that. We've got, by the sounds of it, an incredibly interesting customer who joined a few months ago, which the level of technology that they're introducing sounds incredibly interesting. They're working with blockchain, but one area that I'm really interested in. So before I joined LiveX, I was at Vivino, the wine app.
Yep.
One thing that this company is working on is essentially you can take a photo of a wine list, upload it to their platform, and it will give you a huge amount of sort of financial price data off the back of that. They're talking about using AI to sort of generate, or that's like an AI assisted platform. We had a similar feature of that at Vivino, and I know it's incredibly difficult, but it just goes to show, I think, that if the fine wine industry is able to really sort of bring AI and sort of put AI into the heart and soul of their businesses, then there potentially is going to be a massive explosion of tech-powered fine wine industries. I predict that there will probably be a massive amount of new players, new companies, new tools and in incumbents that are all going to be sort of fighting for this place.
You are seeing in the trading other people into the market. LiveX was certainly one of the early, if not the earliest, mm-hmm. around in terms of particularly generating indices and things like that.
Yeah.
And then having a trading platform. But there's been a number of new trading platforms for fine wines come on.
Mm-hmm.
Because let's face it, as technology's got better, it's got easier and cheaper to build a trading platform. I'm sure when you guys first started out, it probably took you guys and 100 developers an exceedingly long period of time. And then you get competitors now entering the market who are doing it a lot faster because they've just got better tools to develop things.
Mm-hmm.
Is that one of the reasons why you're moving away from trading product and trying to add more value add through your data and information?
I don't think so. I'll challenge that. Our transactional data is always going to be absolutely sort of central, fundamental and core to everything. Having that data kind of unlocks all of the other benefits, all the other products, features that we build off the back of it. That's where I think LiveX is in a pretty solid position, because if you don't have that data, and it's very hard and very expensive and takes a hell of a long time to build up that data, then all of the products and services and all the rest of it that you spin off the side of it, they don't have as much gravitas, weight or value as if you do have that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we're in a really, I would say, solid position. Of course, it's a lot cheaper to innovate now. Anyone can do it with AI. And I think fundamentally with all sort of products, it comes down to, are you solving a customer need that they're willing to pay for? And I think the fact that we have all of that data to then build all the rest of it, leverage AI, leverage all technology, I think we're in a pretty good position. But of course, we're going to see more competition. I think it's probably healthy.
I think what we'll do, Tom, is we'll wrap it up there.
Great.